In Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, we see, as we have been talking about in our Romans class the last couple of weeks, the theme of the book of Romans, where Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For therein is revealed the righteousness of God from faith unto faith, as it is written, but the righteous shall live by faith. As we made notice of this morning in Bible class, this little phrase at the end of verse 17, but the righteous shall live by faith, comes from the book of Habakkuk. A very short, just three short chapters, but an interesting little book. And I believe that quote will mean more to us maybe if we know a little bit more about Habakkuk. And so if you haven't studied Habakkuk for a while, turn over to the book of Habakkuk, and we just want to hit the highlights this evening and notice a little bit the context of where this quote comes from. And so we'll just call this lesson, the just shall live by faith, or the righteous shall live by faith. Habakkuk was written about 612 to 606 B.C. It is a part of what we commonly call the minor prophets. There were four major prophets, and there were 12 minor prophets. The major and minor, if you're not familiar, doesn't have to do with how important they are, but just simply the size of the book. 12 of them were fairly small books, and so we call them the minor prophets. We know nothing about Habakkuk. Some of the prophets tell us something about themselves. They will give us ideas from the book about something about their background or where they are from or their occupations or their hometowns. And it's usually not much information in the minor prophets, but a little bit. But concerning Habakkuk, we know nothing at all about his personal or his background life. And the name Habakkuk means to embrace or an ardent embrace. And probably has to do with the idea of embracing or comforting the nation, is Brother Haley's idea, that the word is a word that would symbolize in the book the fact that God was comforting his people at a time of great crisis, a great crisis during the time of the nation. As we said, the book was written about 612 to 606, and we guess that because it's very clear that we're near the end of the time of the nation of Judah. You'll remember in your Old Testament history, there was a time when there was one nation. All the tribes were under one nation with Saul, David, and Solomon. And then at the end of the time of Solomon, when his son Rehoboam came to the throne, there was a civil war and a break, and 10 tribes of the north separated from the two tribes in the south. The tribes in the north took on the name Israel, or Ephraim is what they are known by. And in the south, of course, Judah, the nation of Judah. And the first nation, the nation of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, were taken away into Babylonian captivity in 722. So since this book is written down closer to 600, it's clear that Israel, the north, is gone. Sometimes we call this period the Judah alone period because Judah was left by itself. The northern nation is taken away into captivity, but Judah continues to exist. And so they were taken, Israel was taken into captivity, but Judah was spared. Both nations had a problem with idolatry. It's just that the northern nation waxed worse and worse sooner. But God would eventually also punish Judah in the south. They continued in their sinful ways, even though God, we might say, gave them a reprieve for about 135 years approximately. Still, they continued to go down the same road as Israel, continued in their idolatry, continued in their sinfulness, and God would also punish them. In 612 BC, we see that the nation of Assyria was defeated by the Babylonians. Assyria, Nineveh was their capital, had been the powerful nation up to that point for the last couple hundred years in the Middle East. But now the Babylonians came to power. The Babylonians defeated the Assyrians, and now they are in power in the Middle East. And at about 606 BC is the first time that captives were taken into Babylonian captivity in the south. Babylon would make three raids upon the nation of Judah. The first in 606, the second in 597, the third in 586. Finally, at 586 is when the temple was destroyed. The final captives were taken away. The city of Jerusalem was burned to the ground. The city was broken down, and Israel, the nation of Judah, ceased to exist for 70 years until God brought them back from captivity. The reason that we say 612 to 606 in that time frame was because clearly in the writing of the book, Babylon is the nation that's on the horizon. And so Assyria's dead, at least in the sense of destroyed, defeated. Babylon is on the horizon, but Babylon hadn't conquered them yet. So it's sometime in that time frame, during these last days of Judah, that Habakkuk writes. The book of Habakkuk differs somewhat from the other prophets in this respect. Instead of taking Jehovah's message to the people, usually in the prophets, God selects a prophet, and God gives the prophet a message, and the prophet takes the message to the people. In this case, the prophet Habakkuk begins the book by having a message or complaint to God. He comes to God with a complaint. And then we see the back and forth between the prophet and God as God answers his complaint and explains to him. And of course, then the message is given to the nation. And Habakkuk's complaint is simple. Open your Bibles, and we're going to be reading some together this evening. We're going to read a good part of the book, and so please open your Bibles. If you've turned out you don't have a Bible, there's some in the back, but we're not going to have it on the overhead tonight or on the screen tonight, maybe a verse here or there, but we're going to be reading a lot from the text itself. But in these first four verses of the book, we see Habakkuk's question, or Habakkuk's complaint. Basically, the question is, how long will we cry, Jehovah God? How long will we cry for help from the violence and the wickedness in the land? Habakkuk does not begin the question concerning Babylon. That's going to come up in a minute. But Habakkuk's first question, his first complaint is God, why have you allowed wickedness to continue in the land? Why have you allowed the wicked people to take advantage of those who are righteous? And so in verse 1, the oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw, how long, O Lord, will I call for help, and you will not hear? For I cry out to you, violence, and yet you do not save. Notice what he says to God. He says, I cry out to you, violence, the New American says, yet you do not save. Why do you make me see iniquity and cause me to look on wickedness? In other words, why do you cause me to continue to have to look round about me and see all this wickedness and sinfulness around me? He says, yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contentions arise. Therefore, the law is ignored and justice is never upheld. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. And so his complaint to God is that here's all this wickedness that's before me. There's violence and there's wickedness, he says. There's iniquity in the land. And he says there's destruction, meaning that the powerful have taken advantage of the weak and of the poor and to those that they can take advantage of. And there's strife and there's contention in the land. And the law has been ignored. Some of the versions say the law has been ignored. Some translations say paralyzed. Some say ineffective. And so he says the law is ineffective. Someone has said reading the minor prophets about the sins of the nation of Israel is like reading the New Testament today. I mean, reading the newspapers today. You look at the newspapers and do you ever feel like the law is just being ignored? Ever feel like the law has been paralyzed? The law is ineffective. We know the laws are on the books. We know that certain people should be punished. We know certain things shouldn't be going on, but they go on anyway because there are people who are in power that just look the other way. There are people in power that want them to go on. There's nothing new under the sun, as the writer of Ecclesiastes says. There was wickedness back then. There were those in power who were taking advantage back then. There are still people in power today. He says the law is ignored. The law is paralyzed. The law is ineffective. Justice has been perverted. Is justice ever perverted today? He says the wicked surround the righteous. In other words, justice is distorted. It's like a mob that surrounds a man and does not allow the man to do what the man wants to do or needs to do. The wicked have surrounded the righteous. The wicked have taken advantage of the righteous. The wicked are doing what they want to do, and the righteous are powerless. And so Habakkuk's complaint is to God. His complaint is, Lord, how long, he says in verse 2, how long will I cry for help and you not hear? Here is a prophet that's crying out to God. And I can't read his attitude. I don't know that he's being disrespectful. It almost sounds disrespectful, but I don't know that Habakkuk's being disrespectful. But he's just calling out for righteousness to exist. Lord, how long is this going to last? Well, the Lord answers the complaint. And God's answer to him is, he's appointed the Babylonians to take advantage of this, to take care of this. And so read with me a little bit, beginning at verse 5, and notice what the writer says. God answers him and says, behold, ye look among the nations. Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people, who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places that are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate in themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle, swooping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces moves forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings and rulers are a laughing matter to them. They laugh at every fortress. They heap up rubble to capture it. Then they will sweep through like the wind and pass on. But they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God. What is God saying to Habakkuk? Habakkuk has asked the question, Lord, how long? And God doesn't answer the how long. He doesn't answer the how long question. He simply says, you just watch and be amazed. I'm going to work something in your day that's going to amaze you. And that is, he says, I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people. He says, verse 6, to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They're going to seize places that don't belong to them. And he says in verse 7 that they are feared and they are dreaded. Their justice and authority delegates with themselves. They're their own authority. So by what right do they seize these things? They don't have to have the right of any kind. They don't have to have something from the court saying that they can come and look through your house and find. They're just going to come do it. They're going to come do it. They are a power unto themselves. They are a God unto themselves. They are authority unto themselves. He says, and they are swifter than leopards. They're keener than wolves in the evening. What are evening wolves like? That's feeding time. That's feeding time. How fierce? One version says, fierce, more fierce than wolves in the evening. How fierce are wolves when they get hungry? Coming as a pack. Well, you better not be around. They're keener. They're fiercer than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like the eagle. Have you ever seen a picture of the eagle flying, suddenly swooping down some of these nature programs, some of these nature pictures, and here's the eagle flying and swooping down, and then he just suddenly, boom, he picks up the fish or whatever it is, and he flies off with it. He's swooping down, he's watching, he snatches his prey, and he continues, the powerful eagle. And so that's how they are pictured. They fly in as an eagle, swooping down to devour. All of them for violence. Their hordes of faces move forwards. They collect captives like sand. Now there's a description for you. They collect captives like sand. They just scoop it up by the millions. Like like bits of sand. They laugh at kings. They laugh at fortresses. They turn fortresses into rubble. There's a big city there. What do? It just becomes rubble to the Babylonians. They're fierce. They're powerful. So Habakkuk says, Lord, look at how wicked Judah is. And God says, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to send the Babylonians. Well, what's Habakkuk's next response? Habakkuk's got a problem with that. He's got a problem with that. Habakkuk says, wait a minute, Lord. Wait a minute. I know that we are sinful, but they're worse than we are. That just doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem fair. That doesn't seem like your justice to they're more wicked. Are you going to allow the more wicked? Are you going to allow them to punish us? I mean, they're even worse than we are. And so he doesn't understand. Let's read that section. Look at the beginning, verse 12 through the end of the chapter here in chapter 1. He begins by complimenting God. I think still I don't really read rebellion in Habakkuk, but he's puzzled. Maybe you read it differently. I'm just not sure about some of these things. But he begins by showing honor and confidence in God. He says, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? Notice what he calls him. He calls him from everlasting. He calls him the Holy One. He calls him the Rock in verse 12. He says, your eyes are too pure to approve evil. He respects God and God's justice, but he doesn't understand. So he says, you're my Holy One. We will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge, and you, O Rock, have established them to correct. Your eyes are too pure to approve evil, and you cannot look on wickedness with favor. He seems to be expressing confidence in God. He seems to be saying, like he's scratching his head, Lord, I know you're righteous, and I know you don't approve evil, but, verse 13, why do you look on favor, with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why have you made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things without a ruler over them? The Chaldeans bring all them up with a hook, drag them away with their net, gather them together in their fishing net. Habakkuk seems to be saying, it's not right, it's not justice. As God, just as you have said, they just swallow people up with like dust with the handfuls. They take them. Habakkuk's illustration is like a fishing net, like a dragnet that's just dragged through the sea. A dragnet is not discriminating. A dragnet doesn't look underneath the water to see what kind of fish it's catching. A dragnet just drags and gets all of it. And he says, they're just like a dragnet, the good and the bad, in other words. The good and the bad are caught up. Here's righteous people in the nation, Lord, and yet they're going to get drug in, and they're going to get punished, and they're going to get hurt. I just want you to hurt the unrighteous ones. I want you to take care of the unrighteous of the land. And now you're going to use Babylon like a dragnet to drag everybody in? And he says, they rejoice and they're glad and they offer their sacrifice to their net, in other words, to their gods that enabled them to do this. Because though these things their catch, through these things their catch is large, their food is plentiful, will they therefore empty their net and continually slay nations without sparing? I believe that Habakkuk is asking the question, will they just keep on going and going and going? Here you're allowing them to do this. And they're powerful and they're strong and they're going to catch up all the good and the bad together without discriminating, and good people are going to get hurt, Lord. And so he doesn't understand. Well, chapter 2 begins and Habakkuk gets his answer from God. And basically, as we see on the screen, two or three things God says in this chapter. First of all, God tells him that he will bring judgment against the Babylonians. Basically, God's answer is, once again, God doesn't tell Habakkuk everything he wants to hear. He doesn't answer all the questions that Habakkuk asks. But basically, God says to Habakkuk that God's going to bring judgment on the Babylonians. Habakkuk ended the first chapter, and I realized the chapters weren't there originally, but he finished his last statement in verse 17 saying, "Shall he therefore empty his net and slay, and spare not to slay the nations continually?" He's asking the question, are you just going to let him run roughshod over the nations forever? And God's answer is no. No. I'm going to punish him too. But he doesn't answer Habakkuk's question about why. Why are you allowing this to happen? And his answer really to Habakkuk, as we said in class this morning, is twofold. The first part of it is in verse 4, where he says, "Because his soul is puffed up, it is not upright in him, but the righteous man shall live by his faith." The first answer that God gives to Habakkuk is, he's puffed up, he's not right, and God would go on to tell him that he will be punished. But he says to Habakkuk, the righteous will live by faith. What he's telling Habakkuk is, trust me. He doesn't explain himself. God doesn't have to explain himself to us. That's one lesson we learn in this book. God doesn't have to explain himself. We may not always understand, but God doesn't have to explain himself. But God does tell Habakkuk, the righteous shall live by faith. And he ends the chapter after the chapter here where he talks about the Babylonians, and we won't read all of it, but he talks about the Babylonians and how haughty they are and how they're going to conquer many. And yet he also says their enemies will someday rise up against them, verse 6 and 7 and 8. And because they have looted the nations, the other nations will loot them. And because they have shed blood, others will punish them. Because they have done this to other, God will bring retribution to them. So God is saying to Habakkuk, I know you don't understand, but don't worry about the justice side of it. I will take care of Babylon. But my message to you is, just trust me. The righteous will live by faith. And then in verse 20, the very last verse of the chapter, he says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And that simply means to us, that simply says for us to recognize Jehovah God, listen to him, submit to him. God is still on his throne. God is in his holy temple. He wasn't talking about the temple in Jerusalem. He's talking about his throne in heaven. Jehovah God is still on his throne. He is still ruling. He is still reigning. And we may not always understand what's going on in this world, but we need to submit, we need to listen, we need to trust. And so we sing that little song, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. It doesn't mean don't run in the building. It means to trust in God. Well, in the third chapter is a song of Habakkuk. After God answers Habakkuk, then Habakkuk in this chapter, he gives a psalm of praise, a prayer for compassion in the midst of judgment. The third chapter is an expression of the praise and recognition to God for his power and his wisdom. He says in verse 2, in wrath remember mercy. The request of the prophet is, okay, I understand that you're going to bring your wrath against the nation because of our wickedness. But God, I would pray, Jehovah, I would pray that in your wrath, remember mercy. Be merciful to your people. He expresses his faith in God. He trembles as he waits for the Chaldeans who are coming. He says, though the fig tree should not blossom, yet I will exalt in the Lord. The very last verse of the book, he says, he has made my feet like hinds' feet. Let's read just a little bit of this chapter as we think about these verses and this psalm of praise to God and his trust in God. He is a prophet now who has come to the realization and to the understanding that God is in control. He may not always understand, but he needs to trust in Jehovah. And in this chapter, we see his remembrance. He kind of turns back the clock and remembers God's actions through the nation and God's benefits upon the nation and God's blessings upon his people. And so verse 1, a prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet. He says, O Jehovah, I have heard and reported of thee. I'm going to change and read out of the New American Standard. He says, Lord, I have heard the report about you and I fear. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God comes from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. His splendor covers the heavens, and the earth is full of his praise. Notice the praise that he gives to God. He recognizes God has filled his earth with praises. His radiance is like the sunlight. He has rays flashing from his hand, and there is the hiding of his power. Before him goes pestilence, and plagues come after him. God is able, like in Egypt, to send plagues and pestilence if he needs to accomplish his purposes. He says, he stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nation. Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan under distress. The tents and the curtains of the land of Midian were trembling. Did the Lord rage against the rivers, or was your anger against the rivers, or was your wrath against the sea, that you rode on your horses and the chariots of salvation? Your bow was made bare. The rods of chastisement were sworn. You cleaved the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and quaked, and the downpour of water swept by. The deep uttered forth its voice. It lifted high its hands. Sun and moon stood in their places. They went away in the light of your arrows, at the radiance of your gleaming spear. In indignation, you marched through the earth. In anger, you trampled the nations. You went forth for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You struck the head of the house of the evil to lay him open from thigh to neck. You pierced with his own spears the head of his throngs. You stormed in to scatter us. You exalted. Your exaltation was like those who devour the oppressed in secret. You trampled on the sea with your horses, on the surge of the many waters. Habakkuk is just expressing in poetic language the power of God and his trust that God has done right. But he ends with verse 16 through 19. And notice carefully what he says. He says, I heard, and my inward hearts trembled. I believe that Brother Haley is correct. There's kind of a break here between verse 16 and 15 and verse 16. Up to verse 15, he's been praising God, but now he ends the book. He's still praising God, but he's come to his conclusion. He says, I heard, and my inward parts trembled. At the sound, my lips quivered. Decay entered my bones, and in my place I tremble, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. What's he saying? He is saying, Lord, I heard you. He didn't like it, but he says, I heard you. And he says, now I tremble within. My lips quiver. My bones are decaying. My inward parts are trembling. Why? Because the Babylonians are coming. He's saying, I'm scared to death. But I will wait. I will wait. The end of verse 16, but I must wait quietly for the day of distress. It's almost like the man who's waiting for his execution. He knows it's coming, but he knows it's the Lord's will. Habakkuk doesn't know what to expect. He doesn't know fully what's going to happen when the Babylonians come, but here is a prophet that has heard the Lord, and he has committed himself to whatever the Lord's going to bring. You know, that's a great lesson of faith. God had said to the prophet in chapter 2, the righteous shall live by faith. And now that's what Habakkuk's doing. Habakkuk's saying, I don't understand, and it scares me to death, Lord. I'm quaking in my boots, we might say. He says, verse 17, though the fig tree should not blossom, and there should be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the field produces no fruit, no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls. He says, I don't know what's coming, but even if there's no figs, and there's no grapes, and there's no cattle, and there's no nothing, even though the land becomes barren because of what's about to happen to us, yet I will exalt in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord is my strength. He shall make my feet like hinds' feet and make me to walk on high places. I used to think that was a strange way to end a book. By saying, the Lord is my strength. God is my strength. He makes my feet like hinds' feet. Think of a deer. He makes my feet like deer's feet. He makes me to walk on high places. What in the world does that mean? What does that have to do with the price of eggs in China, my daddy used to say? Well, the hind or the deer was secure in those mountain places. Where it might be hard for you to walk, he was secure. Where it might be hard for us to go, he was secure. And God gave him that high and lofty perch away from his enemies and away from those who would be dangerous to him. And he says, though I don't understand, and though all the flocks and the cattle and the olives and everything else fail and be cut off, I will exalt in Jehovah. I will praise Jehovah. Even when I don't understand, I'm going to praise God and trust God. And I will be like the deer at the top of the mountains who's walking securely because I know God's going to take care of me. That's what he's saying. God will take care of me. And that's the way we should feel when we don't understand what's going on. We don't understand why things are happening in our world. It may be sickness. It may be problems. It may be trials. It may be the death of loved ones. It may be things within our nation or the world. There's a lot of things that we cry out and we just don't understand why. But the message of Habakkuk is, the righteous shall live by faith. Just trust in God. Do what's right. Live for Him. Seek His will. And all will be well. And He will make our feet to be like hinds' feet. He will take care of us. Oh, we may at times have to suffer like Israel had to suffer, but the righteous would live by faith. And the righteous God would bless, and the righteous God would take care of. And that's the lesson for us. The righteous still live by faith. If you're not a Christian, live by faith. Don't know that there's anyone here this evening that's never obeyed the gospel of Christ. But we offer the invitation for those who need to obey the gospel or who need to make their life right. Trust in God. Live every day trusting in Jehovah God. And He will make your feet like hinds' feet. While together we stand and sing the song that's been selected.